The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Time for our book club. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Sinead Cuddihy from Tired Mammy Book Club. And with her is our very own from this programme, David O'Connor. And we're discussing a book called The Last Thing to Burn by Will Dean. I'm traumatised after it, Sinead.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Do you know what? I was reading it last week and over the weekend. I'd say there were two nights where I had disturbed sleep.
I'd well believe it.
It's really frightening.
Yeah, it's a really difficult one. Like David just asked me before we came in here, did you enjoy it? And I was like, it's not exactly one you can say you enjoyed, but it certainly sticks with you and it's the definition of a page turner.
So give us the synopsis then so people know what we're talking about.
So basically in this book, it's about the main character is, well, she's known as Jane. Her real name is Tan Dao. She was trafficked to the UK from Vietnam. So she was brought over to the UK thinking she'd be working, you know, in a legitimate job. And she ends up held hostage by this farmer out in the middle of nowhere. And he keeps her captive and refers to her as his wife. Calls her Jane, after I believe his mother. Mm-hmm. He has had a previous wife, which we don't really know the full story there either. So questions abound as to whether she was another person like our Jane in this story. So it's just all about sort of what happens and how she's trying to potentially escape. But like she's out in the middle of nowhere in rural England.
And she's been
with
there
no resources.
Four
she's
years.
Been there for, yeah, 7 or 8 years. She came to the UK with her sister and she doesn't know where her sister is. She believes her sister has, you know, got a job in a nail salon in Manchester and she gets all these letters. But as time goes on, we discover that's not necessarily the full truth.
So, David, could you answer that question? Like, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I think I did. And I kind of went in not necessarily closed-minded about it all, but I was trying to remind myself with the thriller genre, probably more so than any other genre, the start of it is so alien to the end of it. I was thinking, you know, naturally, as the kind of tension increases and the walls close in, that the characters are going to face struggles going on. You hit the start of this book and you hit the ground running immediately, that you're mid-escape attempt, that Jane's trying to get away from Len's house and everything there. And I think Will did a great job, Will Dean, the author, of telling you so much in that opening chapter about all the characters, that pretty much immediately as a reader, you plant your flag over who you're supporting. Because, you know, Jane's escaping and Jane is a wounded creature, essentially. I think there's something innate in us as humans that we just want to protect someone. And she's clearly panicked and wounded. And what we know about Len from that opening chapter is that he has given Jane his mother's clothing, his mother's name, insists she cooks like his mother. Mm. So there's already kind of something of, the reader thinks, maybe a bit of a psychosexual dynamic going on there. Something that even makes Sigmund Freud kind of lick his lips looking at that kind of stuff. So I thought it was great because I knew it was about captivity. I knew it was about someone being held against their will. And I very much thought of Misery by Stephen King.
Yes.
And obviously with Misery, you kind of live the captivity in that one. You're there from day dot. But I don't know about you, Claire. Could you join in this? And we're already 7 years deep. It's just a completely different pace of captivity.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and you said this to me when I was reading it, that you can't put it down. So you'd say to yourself, well, I'll read a chapter or two. You cannot stop at a chapter or two. It just keeps you in there. It's really hard to put it down because the pace of it is very fast, isn't it?
Yeah. And there are moments, especially, you know, readers that will have read them already, is that there are moments when, say, if it's the birthing scene that happens throughout the book, that there are moments where I found my eyes almost just scanning the words. I couldn't get to the end of the chapter quick enough. And because it was just fraught with tension, I immediately just kind of looked at my watch. All right, I should be going to bed, but I'm actually going to read another chapter here.
This is when she was giving birth in the cottage.
Absolutely horrific. Like, there's so many times where Len just says, you know, this is what women do, this is what my mother did, this is, and it's obviously things he has never and will never experience, and the torture that he puts her through is just absolutely, like, even there's a scene where he's extracting her tooth and it is just...
David suffered through that one as well, didn't you, David?
Yeah, I have a very particular thing in any kind of medium about teeth and dentistry work, and watching that, I genuinely read it, one hand on the book, the other hand covering my mouth to protect me from any potential... You know, Len targeting me.
Jumping out of the book at you with his pliers.
the birth of the baby, I don't think we're ruining anything for people, but she has this baby and then you have this gorgeous relationship between her and the baby, which is lovely to see. But the backdrop to that is, my fear reading it was always, what is he going to do to the baby? Mm. Will the child survive this? Not just because the child at times was ill, because they were so isolated and had no medical care, but also because he was such an unpredictable, weird character that you just didn't know what he was going to do next.
And I think that was her breaking point too. Because, you know, when she had, and obviously this is a mild spoiler, but we are here to talk about the book. You know, he has named her Jane, and then the baby comes along and she gives her baby a Vietnamese name, which he knows nothing of. And they call the baby Mary initially. And then at one point he's like, oh, she doesn't really look like a Mary to me. She looks more like a Janie. And I think it's at that point something clicks. Like, I've shivers even thinking about that now. Something clicks in her, in the mother's mind, because she's like, he's going to repeat this cycle.
Yes.
As you said, David, like, you know, there was this relationship with his mother that's throughout, it's threaded throughout the book, and he's named Jane for his mother, and now he's talking about naming the baby as well. And you wonder, you know, I think that's her breaking point, and that's where she's like, we can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then there's the added element of, there's a new captive brought
in the basement.
And, you know, we initially don't know who that is. And obviously that unfolds as well. So that's another dynamic where she has to make all these decisions, but ultimately she knows it's time, after all this time, to get out.
I think you guys can probably speak to it far better than I can, but I think without the birth of that child, I don't know if Jane, we'll call her for now, would have ever been able to keep tackling Glenn in however she survived. I think she had rebellious moments. Mm. I think any time she changed the language in her own head, where she'd be saying, oh, I'm wearing whatever, my underwear, my clothes, she'd change it in her own head to his mother's underwear, his mother's clothes. And each time she did that, that was a little mini rebellion. Absolutely. Where she didn't give in. And I felt without the child, without that kind of mother's urgency to protect something else, I don't know if she'd ever try and protect herself the same.
Did she frustrate you a bit in that she was very compliant in order to protect herself?
Yeah, undoubtedly. Now, I'm aware I'm coming in with this not having an iota of comprehension over what she would have gone through and suffered in those years. But for myself, she was kind of, whatever Len would throw at her, she would take it, but in the sense that she had to take it because she was afraid that her sister, Kim Lee, would get deported. But I remember thinking, like, come on, Jane, look at the men you're dealing with here. Do you really think they're letting your sister just live her life out there? I didn't know what had happened to Kim Lee at this point, but I was still thinking, I was like, come on, Jane, you have to know. Yeah, you can't trust these guys.
But she was so vulnerable because she has this injury that he's inflicted on her ankle. I don't know how far to go now with the spoilers. I hope that's not too far. But she has this injury, which means that if she tried to ever physically attack him and he turned on her, which he inevitably would, she just wouldn't come out the best in that scenario. You always felt that was the problem here, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think the idea of tackling Glenn, I guess, head on was definitely, whenever she described Len in the book, we were never really given any human traits about Len, I felt like. In terms of the actual facial features, I just remember his eyes were described once in the book. But other than that, she keep referring to him as a beast. So that kind of let you know what she was up against. But I think that's why I'm, as a reader, haven't been tortured for 7 years on end. I'm reading this thinking, come on, stand up for yourself.
People want to know the name of the book. So the reminder of the name is, it's called The Last Thing to Burn by Will Dean. It's been out for a little while. I hadn't come across it, but I don't know about you, Sinead. It's not a book that I'd probably pick up to read.
I had actually read this about a year after it came out in about 2021, and I reread it again. And as I said to David, I actually got a bit more. I think always when you read a book for a second time, you get a little bit more out of it. And I probably, again, enjoy is a strange word to use with these books, but I did probably enjoy it a little bit more this time. You know, Will Dean has written a number of great books. Obviously, he's a thriller writer. I think it was quite popular at the time, but then just sort of faded into, not obscurity, but it just kind of faded into the background a little bit.
I don't regret reading it, but I found it quite a stressful book to read.
I think very different to some of the other books we've read so far. It's not one that you're going to be picking up for your auntie for Christmas.
Yeah, I'm still deciding whether I would recommend it. Mm. I think I probably would.
I think to a specific type of reader.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, somebody who enjoys, and like I do, I really enjoy thrillers and crime fiction. I read quite broadly, but this will always be my go, because it is something you'd pick up and read probably on a flight, you know, 2 days max, if you had the time to devote to it. A difficult one to do. And obviously you said you had nightmares, but...
Someone's saying this is like, it sounds like Strange Sally Diamond by Liz Nugent, which I have read. Crash by Freida McFadden. It's a whole other level of intensity and emotional terror, I think, in there as well.
I think on the front of my copy, and I mentioned this the last time, Marion Keyes had described it as Misery meets Room. Obviously, you mentioned Misery and Room being the Emma Donoghue book where she's trapped in the room. So there is, you know, we've got a lot of these stories, but it's very,
And it's, I found it's Room extreme. Quite challenging to, yeah, to read as well.
I remember I picked it up in a bookshop in Kilkenny and I got on the train and I did not put it down until I went to bed that night. I read it in pretty much one sitting.
Mm-hmm. What about the recommending question, David? Yeah,
I think I definitely would, because I think the story is so gripping and there's kind of a reason for it at the middle of it all. And I think what Will Dean does, he essentially reimagines a very old idea in storytelling. And that's the idea of being held captive in the home of a blind tyrant. So, you know, if you go right back to kind of the start of not only literature, but storytelling itself, you've got Homer's The Odyssey. And in that is Polyphemus, the Cyclops, who holds Odysseus and his shipmates captive. And they blind him. That's how they end up escaping, ultimately. But even a bit more closer to home, you've got Samuel Beckett's Endgame, where the tyrant Ham, who's also blind, rules over his servant Clove. So I think the reason a tyrant is blinded is to temper them in the story. Because if they had all their faculties, they would have total authority in their home and there would be no escape. Mm. And I very much believe Len is very similar to that, because he's not blind in a visual sense, but he's blinded by his own ignorance of what's going on. Mm. That he holds such an absolute view of the world and there is no deviating from it. You know, even for the example that constantly would happen in the book, is at the end of every day how he'd put on the TV and he would have Jane sit by his feet while he sat in the armchair, she sit at his feet.
Touching her hair.
Rubbing her hair, like a dog. Mm. Well, even then, I'd let the dog up on the couch. I'm that kind of person. So like, even less than that. But like, she'd be sat there beaten and broken and Len would have the like, not even cheek, because he wasn't even aware and he was being cheeky. He would say, "It's a great life, isn't it?"
Yeah, that line that he used all the time. Yeah. This isn't bad, is it, Jane? We have a good life.
And I think, you know, you have to wonder what sort of life he would have had. You know, was he that isolated growing up? There's no mention of his father, any siblings, anything like that. So, you know, I really wonder. I would love to know more about that.
Would you have any pity for Len?
Absolutely not. But it just, you know, he has the same meals on the same days. He's got this very routine. He's living in this isolation. There's only a mention outside of the people that live in that house. There's only a mention of one other person. And that's a neighbour who at one point I thought didn't exist. We find out in the epilogue what happened to him. So he did exist. But I think, you know, he didn't have a world outside of that home.
Okay, we better recommend a book for next month. David, are you in charge of that now?
That's me. So this may be a little bit outside people's comfort zone. I'm going to be very quick. It's a little bit fantasy. So it's Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. And I'm going to say it as, if you're a fan of Apple TV Severance, this could be right up your street, but I'm just going to say, you know,
I'm not going to like this now.
I think it's a great choice, actually, though, because
have you read
of that
it?
Reason. No, I haven't read it, but I'm looking forward to reading it. I've heard good things, and a very good friend of mine has read it and enjoyed it. And I think the great thing about book clubs is always to read something a little bit outside of your comfort zone.
Oh, you're probably right. So give us the name of it again.
Piranesi,
if you want to join us next month for the book club. David O'Connor, thank you very much indeed, and Sinead Cuddihy.
The Clare Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.